Welcome to another deep dive, this time into a story that's ancient, but man, is it ever relevant today.
Definitely.
We're going to be talking about, a siege in the Bible, a city that is absolutely starving, and a king who's more interested in pointing fingers than, you know, finding a solution.
Oh, yeah.
And have you ever felt like that?
For sure.
We've got excerpts from a lecture series by Dr. John Oswald. And he's going to help us unpack this crazy story of Samaria during this just brutal famine. I mean, we're talking so brutal that people were paying more for a donkey's head than for a human life.
Yeah. You know, it's just a fascinating look at how society reacts when it's put under that kind of pressure. You know what I mean? And Dr. Oswald points out that a donkey's head was going for like 80 shekels.
Wow.
And just to give you an idea, a male slave was worth like 50 shekels and you could get a wife for 15.
Okay. So that's just messed up on like every level.
It's really bad.
But it does set the stage, right? We're talking about like total economic collapse.
Yeah.
Like the kind of situation where people are making choices that you wouldn't even think about.
Yeah.
Just to survive. And in the middle of all of this chaos, we've got King Jehoram, who, he seems to be losing it.
Yeah, he's not exactly projecting strength and leadership. You know, when a woman asks him for help, he just throws his hands up and he's like, well, if the Lord doesn't help you, where can I get help for you? For the threshing place, from the wine press.
So it sounds like he's kind of passing the buck, right? Like, don't blame me, blame God. Is that kind of what Dr. Oswald is getting at here?
Well, that's definitely one way to look at it. You know, Dr. Oswald suggests that this is like a classic human reaction, especially when, you know, we're feeling far from God.
Yeah.
It's easy to assume that he's against us, that he's like the source of all of our problems. You know, it's easier to point a finger than to look inward and take some responsibility.
Yeah. And it's not even just that he's blaming God, right? This woman comes to him and tells him a story that's like straight out of a horror movie.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she and another woman had to resort to cannibalism to feed their families.
It's just brutal. And Jehoram, instead of like taking any responsibility, he flips out and turns on the prophet Elisha.
Right. He starts blaming Elisha for the famine. Like the prophet somehow, you know, like whipped up this whole disaster. It's a classic case of scapegoating. And it makes you wonder, why are we so quick to find someone to blame when things go south? You know, is it really just easier than admitting that we screwed up?
Totally. Oh. And I mean, we see this all the time, right? In politics and businesses, like even in our own personal lives, when something blows up, it's like the first thing we do is find someone else to pin it on.
Yeah. It's like a defense mechanism.
Yeah.
But it can be so destructive. Instead of like working together to fix the problem, we're just pointing fingers and it just makes everything 10 times worse.
Right.
In Jehoram's case, it blinds him to any possible solution, even like a miraculous one.
Which is really interesting because then we see that Elisha seems to be totally aware of what's going on. He even tells the city elders, like, hey, don't you see how this murderer is sending someone to cut off my head?
It's
like he's got this inside scoop on Jehoram's whole mental state.
Yeah. And Dr. Oswald really emphasizes Elisha's spiritual awareness here. You know, he's not surprised by the king's anger or his attempt to shift the blame. He gets how deep Jehoram's despair is, and he sees how it's twisted into something really dangerous.
So we've got a king who's spiraling, a prophet who seems to know a lot more than he's letting on, and a city that's literally starving to death. What happens next? Does Jehoram actually try to kill Elisha?
Well, before things get too crazy with Elisha and the king, there's another part of the story that Dr. Oswald wants us to like really pay attention to. Outside the city, you know, outside the walls, we're introduced to these four lepers, and these guys are like total outcasts, right? They have to live away from everybody else because of their disease, and they're, you know, they're just as desperate as everyone else in Samaria.
Yeah, I mean, talk about like hitting rock bottom. You're dealing with this horrible disease. You've been like kicked out of society, and you're starving to death.
Yeah. It
doesn't get much worse.
Right. It's like the worst possible situation. But Dr. Oswald says that it's in this moment of complete despair that they make a decision that changes everything. They decide to just risk it all and go to the Aramean camp figuring they'll either be killed right away or, you know, maybe they'll find some scraps to eat.
So it's like a, well, nothing to lose kind of gamble.
Yeah.
But why would they even think the Arameans would be nice to them? I mean, these are the guys who are like attacking the city, right? They're the enemy.
That's the thing, right? It seems so crazy. Like, why would you do that? But when you're desperate, people do wild things. And sometimes, you know, those crazy leaps of faith lead to some crazy outcomes. Because when they get to the Aramean camp, it's completely empty.
What? the entire army just vanished. Did they get beamed up by aliens or something? What happened?
Well, the Bible says that God made the Arameans hear the sound of a huge army coming at them, like chariots, horses, the whole deal. They totally freaked out, thinking they were about to get attacked by a bigger army, and they ran away, leaving everything behind.
Wow. So it's like God had this divine sound system going on of psychological warfare. Like, in the Bible, I gotta admit, that's a pretty creative way to break a siege.
It really shows God's power, doesn't it? He didn't have to, like, send down angels or rain down fire. He just used sound, you know, something you can't even see to make the enemy afraid. It reminds us that God often works in ways we just don't expect.
So these four lepers, they find this abandoned camp that's full of food supplies, probably tons of treasure. What do? Do they just, like, grab everything and run?
Well, at first, that's exactly what they do. They start eating and filling their bags with all the stuff they can carry. But then something changes. Dr. Oswald says it's like their conscience kicks in, and they realize they can't just keep this to themselves. You know, they got to go back and tell the people in Samaria what they found.
I'm curious, why do you think they did that? Was it just guilt, or was there something more going on?
That's a really good question. It's easy to think it was just obligation or, you know, fear of God. But I think it's deeper than that. Remember, these guys have been rejected, completely labeled as unclean. And here they are choosing to help the very people who pushed them away.
So, like, they've changed, right? They went from just trying to survive to thinking about other people. That's pretty amazing considering everything they've been through.
And it really makes you rethink who the heroes of the story are. We've got the king who's a mess, totally lost in his fear and anger. And then we've got these lepers who, even though they've got nothing, choose to do something good.
So they go back to Samaria with this incredible news. How do people react? Do they believe them right away, or are they still a little doubtful?
There's definitely some doubt at first. I mean, they've been starving forever, right? They've probably lost all hope. So when these lepers show up talking about an abandoned camp full of food, it probably sounds too good to be true. Some people even think it's a trap that the Arameans are trying to trick them.
Yeah, after everything they had been through, I can see why they'd be suspicious.
Exactly. So King Jehoram, who's still not exactly a great leader, sends out some scouts to check things out. And guess what? They find exactly what the lepers said. The Aramean camp is empty, and there's a ton of food just waiting there. Elisha's prophecy came true in, like, the most dramatic way possible.
Wow, what a story. So the famine is over, the city is saved, and it's all because of these four lepers who took a huge risk and listened to their hearts. But what about that officer who didn't believe Elisha's prophecy? Did he get to enjoy all that food?
Well, sadly, he didn't. Dr. Oswald points out how ironic it is that in all the chaos of everyone rushing to get the food, the crowds actually trampled the officer to death at the city gate. It's a reminder that doubt can have some pretty bad consequences, and that sometimes even our choices that come from fear can lead to something we can't take back.
That's really sad. It makes you think about the choices we make when we're going through something hard. Do we let fear and hopelessness take over like the officer and the king? Or do we take a leap of faith even when it seems impossible like the lepers?
It's a big question, and it's something Dr. Oswald wants us to really think about. Because this story, as crazy as it is, has some really important lessons for us today.
Definitely. So what are the key takeaways here? What can we learn from the king's mistakes, the leper's courage, and the way God works even when things are a mess?
Yeah, I think, like, one of the biggest things I take away from this whole story is, you know how dangerous it is to get stuck in that blame game? Like, Jehoram, he just got so fixated on Elisha being the problem that he couldn't see any other way out, even like a miracle solution. It makes you wonder, you know, how often do we do the same thing?
It's so easy to do that, right? Something bad happens and we just want to find someone to blame. It's like we need to have someone to be mad at.
Right.
But like we saw with Jehoram, that doesn't really help anything, does it? Just keeps us feeling bad and stuck.
It's like we're trying to, like, you know, control the situation by finding someone to punish, but that's not really control, is it?
It's not real control at all. And that can be tough to accept. For sure. Yeah. And that's where I think the story of the lepers is so powerful. You know, they were in this situation that was just completely hopeless. They were outcasts. They were starving. They had every reason to just give up. But instead of, you know, feeling sorry for themselves or blaming other people for their problems, they decided to do something. They took a risk, a leap of faith, and it led them to a miracle.
Yeah, it's like that saying, you know, faith is taking the first step, even when you can't see the whole staircase.
Right.
They didn't know what was waiting for them at the Aramean camp. They just knew they couldn't stay where they were. And it was that courage, you know, that faith that allowed God to work in their lives.
Absolutely. And, you know, Dr. Oswald talks about this idea of waiting on the Lord, which we see when Jehoram says, "Why should I wait for the Lord any longer?"
Yeah.
And Dr. Oswald says that in Hebrew, The word wait is all about trust. So Jehoram isn't just talking about sitting around and doing nothing. He's basically saying, why should I trust God anymore?
Yeah.
You know, he's totally lost hope that God will help.
Right. He's given up.
And that's a really important difference. It's not just about, you know, hoping things will get better. It's about choosing to believe that God is working, even when we don't see it.
And that takes a lot of humility, you know, admitting that we're not in control and letting God take the lead. That can be really scary, especially when things are tough.
Oh, yeah. It's way easier said than done.
Yeah.
So how do we learn to trust like that? You know, how do we let go and let God work? It all sounds, you know, very spiritual, but is there something we can actually do?
Well, Dr. Oswalt says we can start by just acknowledging that we need help.
Yeah.
You know, admitting that we can't do it all ourselves. We can humble ourselves before God and just say, you know, I need you. I can't do this alone.
It's like we have to get out of our own way, you know, stop trying to be the hero and let God be in charge.
Exactly. And then once we've done that, we can start looking for God's guidance through prayer, through reading the Bible, through listening to that little voice inside us, you know, that feeling from the Holy Spirit. It's about being open to the idea that God might be working in ways we don't expect.
So it's not about just sitting around and waiting for a miracle. It's about talking to God, asking for his help, and then being brave enough to take a step, even when we're not sure what's going to happen.
And I think it's also important to remember all the times God has been faithful to us. You know, we can all probably think of times when God helped us in unexpected ways. Maybe it wasn't a huge dramatic thing, but those little moments, you know, when things just worked out, those are all signs that God is there.
It's true. It's so easy to focus on the bad stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But when we remember those times when we felt God's love and help, it gives us strength to keep going.
This story of the Siege of Samaria is a powerful reminder that God is bigger than anything we go through. You know, he's bigger than our fears, our doubts, our mistakes. And he's always working, even when we can't see it, to do something good.
I love that. It's a story about hope and never giving up and believing that God is with us, even when things are really hard. And, you know, sometimes he uses the most unexpected people and situations to do amazing things.
It's true. It reminds us that we all have a part to play in God's plan, even if we feel like we don't matter. Like those lepers, you know, they were the heroes of Samaria, even though everyone thought they were nothing.
This has been a really incredible deep dive. You know, thanks to Dr. Oswalt, we've learned so much more than just a story about a famine. We've talked about why we blame others, how powerful faith can be, and all the surprising ways God works in the world.
It's a story that still means something today, you know, thousands of years later. It reminds us that even in the worst times, there's always hope and God's love and the chance for a miracle.
That's a great way to put it. So thank you for joining us on this journey into the Book of Kings. We hope you'll think about these lessons and maybe even be inspired to take a leap of faith yourself. You know, trusting that even when you can't see the whole staircase, God is there with you every step of the way.